The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
141.
You are correct.
Yes.
Bang on.
Yes. Part of my New Year's resolution.
Speaking of, and I saw this, and by the way, appreciate the messages. When it comes to New Year's resolutions, just think of January as a month-long trial.
Okay.
Then you could start February 1.
Perfect.
So your New Year's resolution is to continue to tell friends, tell family, tell really anybody about the Why Me Project podcast.
Yeah, we would love that. We've already had some people write some lovely things on Facebook,
yeah,
so thank
nice.
You so much. And there are 140 previous episodes that you can check out. So a lot of listening to do.
As Claire says, love, 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 hashtag tell a friend. Let's dive into our guest for this week.
Mm-hmm.
As I, to be honest, didn't know much about said guest, but glad that we had to spend some time together.
And I found out I was almost neighbors with her.
You guys live so close together.
Literally, just doors down. I wish we would have met face to face, but I'll take this.
All right. Dagmar Morgan, how are you?
I'm so great. How are you?
We're doing good, thank you.
Any better, I'd be you.
Oh, goodness.
Marinate on that one. We like to ask this skill testing question, Dagmar, because we never know where it's going to go. Who are you and where did you come from?
Oh, good question. I am a spoken word artist. I'm a pastor and I'm a speaker. And I am from Toronto, also known as the Big Smoke, Hogtown, or the Six.
Yeah.
The Big
Smoke. Proud Torontonian. Yeah, that's like a thing, apparently, the Big Smoke, isn't it?
Because of the pollution, or?
I think it's just all the industry was there. And so way back in, you know, in the olden days, they called it the Big Smoke because it was where everybody went to get the big industrial jobs.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the olden days then. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Toronto and some of the surrounding areas, but mostly Toronto.
Like Toronto proper, or because a lot of people will be like, once you dive into it, no, actually Mississauga or Pickering.
So I was born right downtown at like Women's College Hospital, and I lived in the Beaches as a child and grew up there. And then eventually we moved out a little bit further to sort of like the border of Scarborough and the Beaches.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was technically Scarborough, but everybody that lived there still wanted to call it the Beaches.
Of course.
It's more prestigious than saying you're from Scarborough. But, yeah, and then I spent some of my time in Scarborough. And then we also moved out, like, later moved out into the Pickering area and stuff like that. So Toronto proper and then some of the surrounding areas.
So as somebody who's a spoken word artist and a poet, and was art really a big thing for you growing up?
Yeah, I think I wasn't necessarily an overly artsy kid in the sense that I was involved in the arts all the time, but in my room, I was secretly always writing poetry and singing songs in my mirror and things like that, but I was very shy. So I didn't do any of those things in front of people until much, much later on, but I always found that the arts were kind of a safe place for me, a place where I could go and sort of, you know, leave behind the world and all of my family and the troubles and things like that. I come from a divorced family, and it was really challenging at times to just navigate that and be the oldest of four kids. I had a lot of responsibility, and so that was really an escape for me.
You were how old then when your parents called it quits?
I was six, I think. Yeah.
Do you think, like, looking back on it, were you more shy after that had occurred, or you already were, and this just brought you more into a shell?
I think I was always a bit shy. I'm a little bit more on the introverted side of things, and you wouldn't know it by all the things that I do, but I think I always was like that. But I think after the divorce, you know, it really kind of makes things feel unstable. You don't really have like a solid foundation anymore. And so my mom worked really hard to sort of give us that and to make sure we had everything we needed. But it's just something, it does something inside of you that just changes the way you feel about things. So I think afterwards, I was much more gun shy to sort of put myself out there in front of people. It took me a really long time to be able to do that. And it was a really long fight for me to be able to do that, to stand up in front of people and sing a song. That's what I started doing, was singing and songwriting. And went to Humber College for music and spent some time there working on things like that. So that's kind of how my first foray into the creative part was singing and songwriting. But I had such bad stage fright that I would literally shake, physically shake. And everybody used to make fun of me. They would laugh at me. They'd be like, why are you doing this? I'd be like, I don't know, but I just feel like I'm supposed to. And it took a really long time of just getting up there all the time and being so shaky that my voice wasn't stable and just, you know, completely embarrassing myself on the regular until I got to the point where I got comfortable enough that I could, you know, fully express what it was that I was trying to communicate.
At what point did you feel like the arts was the path for you?
I don't know if I really, really ever felt like I had another option. I think I felt from very young that I was supposed to do it. And I would often think to myself, and sometimes still do think to myself, you know, because I do get so nervous and it's so challenging to even still do the stuff that I do, that when I am just about to do it, I'm like, why do you do this to yourself? Like, you are torturing yourself. Why do you do this? And, but then once it's finished, you realize, like, actually what God is doing through what you are doing, and that that's what he's calling me to do. So regardless of how uncomfortable or challenging or hard it is on me, I know that he has something that he wants to say through me. So then I just keep doing it.
So your parents call it quits. You're six. Did you then lived with your mom?
Yeah, I lived with my mom and my grandmother, who is actually my great-grandmother. So she sort of lived with us and took care of us during the day while my mom was working three jobs and doing all the things that single mothers do.
How was your relationship then with your dad?
Good. I think it took a little while for us to kind of like equalize in terms of, you know, time together and building a relationship that was different from the one that we had when he lived in the house. It was very different, even though it's the same dad, but it really changed a lot. It felt really awkward. And I was young, but I really remember it very clearly. Like, you know, the transition and us leaving the house and walking down the street, you know, with my mom's friend to go and live in another place. I remember all of that very clearly. But my dad through the whole thing was always like very adamant that we were still a family. He was still going to be there for us, and he still loved us, and he still cared about my mom. And so that eased it in a lot of ways for us.
Did it shape your idea of relationship? Did it shape your idea of marriage because you were so young, or it really had no effect on it?
I think it would be hard to not have an effect on it. You know, like even though you try your best, there's still things that kids just naturally internalize things and translate things kind of into their own way. For me, I think it made me really afraid to be married and then to get divorced. So I was very nervous. I think there was a period of time where I was like, I'm never getting married. I'm going to be like a high-powered lawyer, live downtown in a fancy condo, and that's what I'm going to do with my life. And it's like, like the furthest thing from what I actually am. But I think it was just a safety position to kind of put that shell around me and be like, I'm not going to do that so that I don't have to risk that.
When did the faith side of things then enter your life?
So my family, they weren't people of faith at all. So we didn't have a lot of exposure to it. But over the course of my younger life, I had friends, you know, that were believers. I had there was a church around the corner that used to rent out their space to a Christian rock band. And so when they would rehearse in there, they would unlock the doors. And so you would walk by the building, you would hear this music coming out. And so me and my friends used to like go in the door because they had unlocked it to get inside and sit in the back and like watch this Christian rock band. And looking back, I think that had a really big influence on me. Because I remember the feeling of being inside the sanctuary and how I was like, I want to be here all the time. Like there was a difference in that space. It was like the air that I was breathing was different. And then to see people making music, but then it was also about Jesus. It was like, it was very strange for me to put it all together. But I think it did actually really influence me in a lot of ways. Slowly as I got older, it wasn't probably until my 20s, but I actually one day kind of woke up and went, I kind of want to go check out a church. Like I want community, you know, I want hope. And I started to explore and check out different churches and sort of figure things out. But I had no idea about denominations or belief or what the story of the gospel really was. You know, I knew who Jesus was. I knew a little bit here and there, but I really didn't have any foundation for it. And so the fact that I even wanted to be interested or was interested at all, I think is really a movement of God.
Did you find it at all intimidating going to various churches and just trying to navigate that world, which was so new to you?
For sure. I mean, certain churches, I think, did a better job of sort of, you know, welcoming us as people who were interested, but not kind of not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And some churches, you know, you could tell they really wanted you to stay. It was a little awkward at times, but I think overall, I really always felt pretty welcomed by people. It really did frame for me now as being a pastor of a local community, how important it is to welcome people well when they come in, whether they stay or they're a one-time visitor. But people, especially people who don't really know about the gospel or know a lot about church, which is increasing.
You're this introvert. You go to college. You have this creative heart. You graduate college. What's next? How do you put this schooling then into practice?
So I started working as a professional musician. So I went to school. I was a jazz singer. And so I went and we did, you know, we played gigs and traveled around with the band and I did some teaching and things like that. And then slowly but surely, I sort of found that space where I was interested in going to church. And, you know, I loved music and I loved like singing and just the feeling of, you know, that creative process of songwriting and all of that. But it, for some reason, it was just really all falling very flat for me. Like I was not feeling the way about it that I thought I was supposed to. And so one day my friend invited us to his Easter cantata at his church. And the band was just, you know, really, I mean, church musicians. So really well schooled musicians, just unbelievable. The music was amazing and like just over the top, like out of this world, great musicianship. So that was a really easy connection for me to click into. But more than that was I actually sat in that room and thought, now I know what's been missing from my music is that I have been doing it for the wrong reason. Music is meant to glorify God. Everything we do in art is meant to glorify Him. And I'm just making music for me and not understanding why it's not fulfilling me the way that I thought it was going to. And then the answer was because I was doing it wrong. And so that was a huge moment for me. And then everything shifted. And then that was the day I went up to my friend and said, I don't care what I have to do, but I have to figure out how to worship Jesus and you need to show me. And then I joined their worship team and then spent like the next few years spending a lot of time in worship and doing all of those things. And it was completely transformed the entire trajectory of my life.
It's that light switch moment. It's that game changing moment. But what did that look like for you? I know that you said it was that moment that I was like, yes, okay, I understand. How did you see this transformation?
I think the biggest transformation was the way that I just started living my life. So I spent so much time working and doing music, but then I was now doing it as a worshiper. So I was spending more time being of service with music and started walking that out more often. And then what began to happen was that became a full-time volunteer job. But then I had my other job, which was also a full-time volunteer job. And then I had to ask myself the question of, like, what am I? I felt like I was at a dividing line. Like, do I decide to just be a person that, you know, lives and works in the secular world, but also is a believer and walks out their faith, but, like, you know, in their spare time? Or am I feeling called to step into this and take a ministry role? And that was really what changed it for me. So the way that I began to translate everything in my life now needed to be through this other filter. And so I eventually quit my job and basically went into full-time ministry. And then that's how I sort of became a pastor. I started doing that in everyday life, you know, walking alongside people, telling them about Jesus, and then using that as a connection point, I think, for my artistic life in poetry, and using poetry as a way to share the gospel and to share my testimony with other people to sort of show them how my life has changed now that I have this like eternal hope that I can go to.
When did you start writing poetry more seriously?
It happened quite organically. So I had mentioned earlier, I was terrified of getting divorced. And so then that's exactly what happened to me. I got divorced.
Oh, no.
It was really, you know, devastating. And so your life begins to fall apart. So I went through this huge divorce and everything just kind of imploded. And I was like, I'm out. I'm not doing music anymore. You know, I feel like I'm not called to stand on the stage. And in the shape that I'm in, I need to go away and figure out all of these things and do some work on my heart with Jesus. I stepped away, but really found that I was still longing so much for that creative output, like that connection point for me. Writing songs and writing had been like a prayer. It was like my prayer process. It was how I went into my prayer closet and connected with God and worked out myself and listened to his voice in my life. And so I suddenly didn't have that anymore because I had stepped back from all of this. And so I just started writing without any, you know, music stanzas or song form. I just started writing and just sort of like pouring out my heart page after page after page to God, and realized at a certain point that these pieces were more like poetry than they were like music. Maybe this is something that I can share with other people, and started going to open mic night and started kind of reading out these very bad poems. Let's just say it, really bad poetry, into microphones and sharing them in rooms and spaces with other people who were doing sort of the same thing, you know. And then that became where I found spoken word. And so it really transformed from this music into this really challenging time in life, right into a new chapter. And when I started doing that, everything started to kind of shift. Like, that was the big shift in my life, that I really felt God calling me very specifically to something very specific. And it was to use the testimony that I'd been given through this poetry to share with other people, to empower people, to show them the light, and to just share with people the parts of us that are broken and how God can step right into the middle of that.
You were then married how long before you and your husband had called it quits?
5 years.
Does that then make you say, that's it, I hate marriage, I don't want this ever again?
I mean, at first, yes. At first I was like, okay, whoa, like zero interest. But I think that that's part of the healing process. Eventually, as I began to heal and use poetry and just, you know, and just good counsel and friends who were helping me process and talk through things and, you know, all of those things that you do. I went to counseling, so I was in therapy, and I was, you know, figuring all these things out. And I think I got to a place where I realized that I did want to be married, and I did want to have a family and do all of those things, but that I really had an obligation to God to really work on making myself as whole as possible before I go and try to do those sorts of things. Because I really had accepted Jesus and was doing lots of things, and he was working in my life, but I hadn't really gone as far as I needed to in terms of knowing who I truly am and knowing who I am in him. And that maturity, I think, is what was lacking in me when I had gotten married the first time. And so now, having come full circle, I have gotten remarried 2 years ago. And just, you know, and in a completely different place. Like, God is such a redeemer, and I can't believe he was able to clean me up enough that that I could be in a position to have this wonderful man in my life.
Is this his first marriage?
This is his second marriage as well. So we both had come to it having done a lot of personal work in order to be in a position to be willing to do it again.
Ready for round two? Well, I love that you say our God is a God that is one who will redeem our situations and us as individuals. And as you kind of reflect on, you know, what you've been able to do once you started writing, I mean, did you ever in a million years thought that this is the direction that your poetry would take you?
No. I mean, poetry is such a rebel-based art form. Like, it's really like an art form of, you know, like small, smoky back rooms and things like, you know, like you think of it, it's not really something that I ever thought would put me in those kinds of positions. And I think partly, you know, my position as a pastor has certainly given me kind of those opportunities. But what I have been able to do in those moments is bring something really different and special that God has given me. And I think that it's been beautiful to just see that even in those moments, the places that he's opened, that I've been able to use poetry as a means to sort of further connect with people or to bring something meaningful to a conversation or to a TV show or anywhere, you know. And it's been really beautiful to see what he has done with that and what he has done with the work that I have shared.
As somebody who is a poet and a singer and a pastor, is there one that you find more difficult? Because A, you go up on stage to preach, that's a lot of pressure. You go up and you do poetry or you sing, that's a lot of pressure. And as somebody who is an introvert, do you find one more difficult than the other?
Yeah, you know, I think I have the most experience singing, but I think that singing is the hardest. Even though I have the most experience and the most training and all of the things that I've done, I think that's really interesting. But I also think that singing is hard because it's really, there's a lot you're managing at the same time inside your brain in order to be creative in that way. I also think I don't do it as much as I used to. So maybe it feels harder now because I'm a little more out of practice when I do those things. But my mom always told me that when I was a kid, she was like, there was a point in time where we did not know what we were going to do with you because you never shut up, ever. And I think that singing is fine, but a song ends. Whereas when you're being a pastor and a speaker and a spoken word poet, you never stop talking. So it's the perfect place for me.
So now available is Diamonds. Why then did you decide to write it and then put it to paper for everyone else to see?
I wanted to do it's called a chapbook. So it's a chapter of a book, and it's kind of a rite of passage as a poet and an artist to sort of do a chapbook. I did this and I thought, you know, I'll do this as the beginning and just as a way to sort of share my heart, you know, with people and for them to hear some of my testimony because I've had some really powerful experiences sharing those. And probably the most important one was I was at a poetry slam and there was a girl sitting in the audience and she was folding paper cranes and I was like, oh, wow, that's so great. Like, that's such a beautiful thing. Like, why are you doing that? She's like, well, my friend's really sad, so I decided I'm going to fold her 100 paper cranes. And I thought, wow, you look like what a nice friend you are, like sitting here. So each one takes such a long time to do. So she sat there the whole poetry slam just like folding these cranes. I went up and did my, you know, poetry for the night or whatever. I didn't win the contest, but which I think was, I obviously was robbed. But I did after it was all over, I was sitting at a table and the girl walked by. She didn't say anything to me. She didn't even look at me. And she just dropped a paper crane on the table and then walked away. And I was like, what is this? What's happening? Like, so I picked it up and it had been folded and refolded like over and over again. So I was like, but I think I should unfold this. You know, like, I don't know why I thought that, but I unfolded it. And what it said inside was, I understand. And I thought, oh my gosh, like I went up there and shared my own story about my own pain and that resonated enough with her that she felt moved to like create a crane and write this inside and then to give it to me. But she had been too shy to talk to me because I think it's very visceral when you experience it. So I realized in that moment that that visceral experience is the beginning of healing for people and that actually I was doing poetry to heal myself, but that God actually wanted me to use it to help heal other people. And so then sharing my poetry more actively and putting it to paper, putting it out into the world became a bigger priority. If it was just left to me, I think I would have been far too scared to actually put myself out there that much. But I just felt in that moment that this was obviously meaningful for this girl and that there's probably so many other people who are just waiting for you to name their pain for them.
And now your poetry is taking you on a new journey as you have a new ministry.
Yeah, so I created this book and had been feeling for a while that I was called to prison ministry. But like most things that I have felt called to, I hear them, I feel them very deeply, and then I ignore them for a very long time. It was a big calling, and I was very nervous about it, and I didn't want to jump in and be, you know, sort of flippant maybe about jumping into this ministry that's big and deep and serious, and so I waited a long time to sort of figure out what that would look like and what the possibilities were, and I was at a conference, came across Crossroads Prison Ministry, and thought, well, maybe I'll just ask them what they do and, you know, have this conversation. Got into a conversation with Marty, who is the executive director, and we hit it off right away. And the next thing I knew, I was a mentor. So I was writing letters and helping people, like, marking Bible studies and sort of mentoring people through this process of learning the Bible while they're in prison. And then that grew into more things. And then she found out I was a poet, began to ask about it. And then she asked me if I would take my work and send it into the prison system for people. And so then we began this journey of, you know, fundraising to sort of just pay for all the printing and putting all the books together and things like that. And then we'll be sending a good 500 copies into the prison system within the next couple of months.
So then how can somebody get involved with something like that?
They can. Well, there's a couple of things you can do. If you go to my website, you can find out about my book and you can find out about what I'm doing with Crossroads. And there's also a link for Crossroads as well. So if people are interested in being a mentor, finding out more about prison ministry, they can definitely get to that through my website or go directly to their website. It's just Crossroads Prison Ministry. You look it up, you can find it here in Canada. They do amazing work, and it's a privilege to be able to send my stuff into places where people could use it, you know, light into the darkness. John 1:5 says that, and I just feel very strongly about it. And then we're going to expand that into me doing some workshops and things like that with some of the women to talk about, you know, processing their own journey. And so that's in the very beginning stages, but I'm really excited about that. And I just have been really, it's been such a rewarding experience and such a humbling experience.
As you reflect on your life, this is the Why Me Project podcast. So were there any standout Why Me moments that you experienced, whether it was in a life valley or a mountaintop?
I think probably the biggest one would be, why, God, did you choose me to stand in front of people all the time for a living, for a ministry and a calling on life when I am the most nervous person to do that? I really have to fight against that. And I really was like, I'm not sure if I should be doing this because it feels so awkward all the time. Isn't it supposed to get fun at some point? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't. And so for me, I really struggled with that. But that moment was like, why are you picking me? Why are you choosing me to do this? You know, I am not this extroverted person that just so easily does these things. And so I questioned my calling in that moment of like, is this really what you're calling me to do, or is it just me? And then I think the fruit of what God has shown me through what I have done has changed my mind about that. Now I just try to embrace the anxiety.
Aww. Do you have a trick?
I think preparation helps. So if I feel really prepared, I'm a lot less nervous. And I think that just the only trick really is to just keep doing it. The more, you know, nothing replaces stage time. So the more you do what it is that you are supposed to be doing, you get better and better at it. And then even though you're nervous, you know you can still deliver enough to be of service to the people around you.
You can follow her on Instagram, dagmar.morgan or dagmarmorgan.com. Diamonds, collected works of poetry for the modern soul, available everywhere. Appreciate you taking a minute and sharing your heart with us.
Thank you, guys.
Good reminder to download on things like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, become our Facebook friend, Twitter, and whatever else.
Yeah, exactly. And you can always head to faithstrongtoday.com for more.